Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune, Pastor Dusty White, and Chris Hemmelman of Coram Deo Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about Stage 2 Exile. Chris, do you mind summarizing what in the world Stage 2 Exile means?
Sure. So, the beginning of June, on the Gospel Coalition Australia, a man by the name of Stephen McAlpin, I believe is how you pronounce his last name, wrote an article about Stage 2 Exile, and this is essentially what he said, that over the past 50 or so years, the church has been in Stage 1 Exile, which has largely been that the culture sees the church as irrelevant or more silly, backwards, no longer having any real place within the culture. And for the church, that meant ways of engaging the culture to show that we are still relevant, that we still have important, thoughtful, intellectual things to say. And it really was about getting the culture to engage and talk about the church still. So it was kind of keeping a place at the table of ideas. Where Stage 2 Exile, which he says has been happening probably for the past 5 years, is more of an outright hostility to the church. And so he has this great quote from the article that I will read, and here's how it goes. It says, in the last 5 or 6 years, the culture is increasingly interested in bringing the church back into the public square. Yes, you heard that right, but not in order to hear it, but rather in order to flay it, expose its real and alleged abuses, and to render it naked and shivering before a jeering crowd. It is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego standing up before the statue of gold whilst everyone else is groveling and going, psst, kneel down for goodness sake. It is officials conspiring with the king to show that Daniel's act of praying towards Jerusalem 3 times per day is not simply an archaic and foolish hope, but a very real threat to the order of the society and the new moral order that will hold it together. So essentially, Stage 2 Exile is Christians, we're going to be persecuted for our beliefs. People now see the church as a threat to things like unity, freedom, within the culture. And so how are we going to respond to this new stage of hostility where maybe our ways of engaging the culture are going to have to shift from how they have been the past 40, 50 years?
I'm going to have to get past this guy being a bad writer so that I can engage with his ideas.
He's so sarcastic in his article.
It's not the sarcasm. It's that was the poorest sentence structure I've seen in a long time.
Bob's like, getting hung up
really
with
long,
the grammar.
Like, it was just a long and arduous sentence to read.
Notice that I'm okay with that.
So though I think Stephen McAlpin's writing could use a little coaching, I do find his ideas to be interesting. The basic point that he's making, he's tongue in cheek in a lot of this article, it's because he's writing as an Australian, and what he would consider Stage 1 Exile, a lot of the writers in Australia were really at the front edge of the missional church movement and sort of the, hey, let's have church in bars and church in coffee shops and let's acknowledge that the culture sees us as irrelevant. So what does it mean to sort of take the conversation to the culture, learn to be missionaries? And a lot of those ideas were actually really, really helpful to us as we planted Coram Deo. That was a helpful paradigm. In fact, Michael Frost and Alan Hirsch are two Australian guys who wrote a book in 2005, The Shaping of Things to Come, which was a very helpful wake-up call and gave some clarity on what is it going to take for the church to engage the culture where it now is. McAlpin seems to be saying what it's going to mean for us to engage the culture going forward is going to look a little different because we're now engaging a culture that, as you said, Chris, doesn't see us as irrelevant, but rather sees us as threatening, dangerous, wrong.
And in some ways, the labels being thrown at Christians aren't necessarily new completely, but sort of the intensity at which they're being thrown at Christians seems to be something somewhat shocking. And so just even the thought of being seen as bigots or oppressors. So in the cases of these number of businesses that Christians have run and not wanting to serve homosexual marriages or weddings, I should say, and just how the government coming down and people being sued, just the labels of you are a bigot or you are opposing freedom. Those are, I think, new categories for Christians, because oftentimes we're the ones that have opposed bigotry. We've opposed those who would limit freedom. And so even that, adjusting to new labels and how do I think through, man, someone's calling me a bigot or someone says I oppose freedom. What do I do with that?
Is Steve saying that this missional movement is coming to an end, or is he saying we just can't be satisfied with trying to come to the conversation anymore? Like, we're not going to be invited to that conversation anymore, and so we have to change the way we are missional.
What I hear him to be saying is the way we've used the word missional for the last decade or so has been primarily, let's go engage the culture, let's go to them instead of inviting them to come to us. Mm-hmm. Let's take church to the streets. Let's do missional community. Let's get into neighborhoods. Let's be incarnational. You hear a lot of those same words and language. I hear him saying mission going forward, it might look a lot more like just bearing outright hostility. So, like, rather than expecting, oh, if I just invite my neighbors to my gospel community, it'll provide a context for us to have unthreatening conversation about worldview, and maybe eventually we can start to talk about Jesus and the gospel. I think he's saying maybe you should just expect your neighbors are going to think you're a bigot and, you know, immediately judge you. And that's going – so mission is going to be more dealing with hostility rather than dealing with indifference. Mm.
Yeah, that's definitely the tone that I catch from him as well. I have a handful of neighbors that are attracted to my family and even want to hang out with us. Then I have another neighbor who's outspoken, not really against me because we're neighbors, but he's outspoken against my faith and wants nothing to do with it and makes that very clear. And so I think I take that angle with what he's saying here in this article. He's saying you're not just going to be marginalized. You're going to courage is your only way out. He says only courage under fire is your only hope. You know, that's basically what he's saying. So if you're a Christian, buckle up because the war is on. Quit trying to change culture. This is the culture you're in.
And I think one of the challenges is going to be with this hostility, there might be more of a temptation to retreat from the culture, and much like some of the fundamentalism that came out of the mid-1900s with some of the cultural changes, when you're faced with hostility, even when you're trying to offer in a winsome way your faith, face of hostility, it's like, whoa, what do I do here if I'm going to be called a bigot and oppressor? And man, I might even get sued for some of my faith, my beliefs. Am I just going to retreat? And so I think here too, with a missional movement that has trained and discipled people to engage culture, which is a very, very good thing, now that the reception is going to be hostility, are we going to continue to press forward in our desire to engage culture, or are we going to retreat? So I think that's one of the things that he's raising here too, is let's keep what the missional movement has started, but we just have to be ready for the hostility is going to come.
And it seems like it's going to require courage rather than just technique. So I think what got people excited about the first sort of wave of missional church, and even a lot of the people that jumped on board with Coram Deo early on, was, oh yeah, I want to engage the culture. Church is insular, and it sort of has its own culture. It's like this Christian subculture thing. We do want to actually engage real people who don't think like us. And that, so there was a compulsion to that, but that can I think going forward, what we're going to need is actually more courage to not be offended, scared, or put off by people's calling us whatever they think we are, but trying to just be courageous in our convictions and courageous in pressing the conversations, you know?
Yeah, to your comment, Bob, about technique, I think, you know, we look at the missional movement like it's kind of the new technique to evangelicalism, and evangelicalism has been widely embraced. And what I like about Stephen in this article is he says, simply put, we assume that we can have more impact on culture than it can have on us. That's dangerously naive thinking. And so I think he's taking that missional mindset and saying, go be missional, but expect it to not work even. And therefore, your faith is going to have to be deep, deeply rooted in Christ. And that could be all you actually have when you engage culture. So expect culture to not welcome you. And then what are you going to have? You better have Christ as your only hope. So he makes me think in that way.
How do we help people see then, in to use the words of Stephen, that we're not living in Athens, but that we're living in Babylon without being like really sensationalist, like, man, everything, the sky is falling, and so we just got to buckle up and, you know, I don't know, how does this article move us to, okay, well, this is how we live differently then?
I think two things, Mike. One, I was actually reflecting on this as we were talking. I think the first wave of missional church sort of, it was about coolness for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so they saw it as like, oh, this is hip. This is like, you know, and I think for some it was about theological conviction. But there was a lot of people that were about that movement just because like, oh, this is different. It's cool. Mm-hmm. The coolness factor is going away. And so what's left is those who want to be courageous, those who want to be missionaries are going to be called to the exact same thing they always have been, which is, yeah, let's go learn how to be missionaries. Let's be courageous. Let's engage the culture. Let's start from theological conviction. Let's assume Jesus is still saving people. Let's go forward with courage and walk out into a culture that is in some ways hostile. If you wanted to just be the person who grew a beard and drank vodka or whiskey and, you know, sat around in coffee shops and talked about metaphysics, then maybe your days are numbered, you know? Mm-hmm. This is a lean over the plate and take one for the team kind of a mission now. And so I think that, to your point, it presses the question of how are we living as a counterculture, which I think we as a church are set up well to do because we've always said we want gospel communities to be a counterculture, a place where people see, oh, man, Christians do life differently. They have, not only they have different convictions, but their life is lived with a different set of values, and it's beautiful. And when I actually encounter it and see it fleshed out, it's beautiful. So I think part of the invitation is let's keep building a counterculture in our families, in our gospel communities. Let's keep demonstrating to a culture that's going to increasingly see us as whatever, bigots or intolerant or whatever. Let's increasingly demonstrate mm-hmm. the goodness of the gospel in our communal life together. That's at least one answer.
Yeah, it may be that sort of the tip of the spear apologetic for us is not so much the, you know, kind of getting into kind of the philosophy or the engaging of ideas, but it is just a deep faithfulness and a consistency. So we just keep loving our families, loving our neighbors, living lives that are holy and reflect the gospel at work in our lives. And even in the face of that hostility, we just keep at it. And so this faithfulness, this courage, it's kind of just this consistency of living out our faith is going to be the primary apologetic rather than, you know, sort of just the sitting around coffee shop engaging ideas, mm-hmm. as you said.
Yeah, when you look at Jeremiah's letter to the exiles, Jeremiah 29, encourages people to seek the welfare of the city, get married, marry off your own kids, plant gardens, build houses. And then you look at the pastoral letters in, you know, Paul and Peter encouraging the church to, like we've been preaching in Titus, do good works. And so, and that's in the face of oppression, not in easy living times when religion was, or, you know, believing in Christ was cool, but it was in times where you could die for your faith.
I was going to say there's so much biblical material on exile. There's actually a lot for us to gather here. So it's actually fun to think, okay, well, now the books of Ezekiel, Daniel, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and books like 1 and 2 Peter, man, there's so much biblical richness that in times of comfort we didn't actually need to lean on as much, there's a lot there for us to learn how to live in exile, because mm-hmm. God's people have done it for a long time.
Yeah. And where there may be room in some ways of theological engagement, as he mentions here, sort of tightening our language. The culture is starting to use more and more this language of sin and right and wrong, and it's the labels that they are using sort of have been turned on biblical Christianity, and so that our beliefs are now seen as the sin or the weird or backward or intolerant. And one of the mistakes that maybe in some of the more liberal strains of the missional movement was to sort of loosen our categories and our language, where now the culture is strengthening and hardening their categories. Well, that is an opportunity for us to talk about it. I mean, if the culture is starting to become more black and white in some ways about what is sin and what isn't, and less postmodern in some of that, then that's an invitation and opportunity. Okay, let's talk about sin. You have these categories now, so let's talk about it. So I think there is still room for theological engagement. But again, it's going to have to be in the face of hostility, and behind that is just going to have to be this courageous faithfulness and just continuing to walk out our faith in front of people.
I guess I'm still wrestling with how do we help people see this when things aren't as hostile as they could be? Because I feel like we're still kind of oblivious to what could be. I mean, we see it far off, and that's out there. That's not happening in Omaha, Nebraska, so I don't have to worry about it. How do we pastor people towards a sense of urgency, living as exiles and aliens and strangers in a foreign land when it doesn't feel like it?
I like your question, Mike. However, I just don't think it matters.
Okay.
It's not our job to help people see it, nor to create any sense of urgency about it. I think this piece is primarily a piece for leaders, those who are on the front edge of leading the people of God and need to be aware of this stuff. I'm with you that it might be 10 years before America feels like Australia probably feels right now in terms of how this plays out. That's always been true, is that America is sort of the tail end of Western culture because it has a highly Christian influence. And so I'm not concerned that people start rethinking, oh gosh, what's it going to mean for me to live in stage two exile, as much as this is on the dashboard, especially for leaders, and that we're recognizing that there's going to be increasingly a need for us to develop a really robust counterculture. Hmm. So our leadership can't just look like, how do we reach non-Christians? It also needs to look like, how do we raise Christian children and youth to live with a whole different ethic? Yeah. Because you're not going to have, when our kids grow up, Mike, you're not going to have the kids who like go to FCA because it's the cool thing to do at high school. Like, no, that's going away.
FCA is gone.
Your kids are going to be the kids who are like, you freaking bigoted. Like, they're going to get abused at school for having the convictions they do. So we got to train our kids for the courage that it's going to take in that, and not just the sort of, you're not going to have kids that pretend to be Christians because they want to, you know, because those girls are cute over there, or because, you know, there's some social capital that they get from hanging out with the FCA kids. It's very much going to be polarized. And so I think as leaders and as fathers, you know, and as those trying to shape the next generation, there's some important things for us to learn here about just how do we prepare our kids for courageous mission and not just contextualization. And I think people seem to respond with fear sometimes in situations like this, and these things can be disorienting to folks. Culture in America has shifted a lot in the last 50 years. And I just want to encourage people, hey, Jesus is still on the throne. Like, God's not surprised by any of this, and his mission's not going to be hindered by this. Like, he's still going to save people. It's going to require for us just a different type of theological integration, a different type of courageous mission. And so the answer here isn't fear and trepidation and anxiety and what are we going to do. The answer is, all right, how do we grow as disciples so that we can live faithfully in a world that's increasingly hostile? And the beautiful thing is, again, we got a lot of history to draw from there, because not only was that the time of the Jewish people at the end of the Old Testament, but it was also the early church for the first 400 years. And so It's not like we haven't been there before. We've got a lot of good resources to draw from. Mike, if I could just make a plug for the importance of theological reflection, I think this whole idea of stage two exile and just the increasing polarized nature of culture makes it all the more important for Christians to have deeply formed theological convictions that they can articulate, defend, and explain. Because part of if someone out there says, well, you're a bad person for believing what you believe, there's two ways you can respond to that. You can fight. I guess there's three ways to respond. You can fight. You can walk away and say, yeah, whatever. Or you can engage that. And engaging that is going to take a level of discernment, a level of insight, and a level of theological integration that most Christians haven't had to live with. You know, we've been able to get away living off of the fumes of our, you know, the Christianity of our grandparents' era, you know, and people just sort of having a reasonably gracious view of Christians, even if, like your sermon, Chris, it's a Ned, people see us in a Ned Flanders-y sort of way. We've sort of been able to dance around that a little bit. I think more and more every Christian is going to have a thought-out, well-formed worldview, which is, I think, why it's interesting that it's 1 Peter that encourages us, be ready always to give an answer for the hope that is in you, because Peter's writing in a situation very similar, a persecuted empire, Christians in exile. That needs to increasingly be our text and our passion as believers, is to have a robust, grounded, thoughtful, integrated worldview that allows us multiple places to engage people from. So, Porter Brook, Omaha people.
Shameless plug, PorterBrookOmaha.com. Well, thanks, guys. If you're interested in reading this article, it'll be posted on Twitter and Facebook, so please read it and discuss with us on Twitter if you'd like, at Corumdeo Omaha. And we'll talk to you again next Wednesday on the Wednesday Conversation.